everybody. Thanks for joining us for this special edition of the Monday Scramble podcast. We're going to get to a special guest here in just a second. Don't want to give it away. I want to set it up a little bit. Don't want to give away all the nice details off the top. But, you know what, everybody, for the last 3 or 4 years, we knew how big of a year 2016 was going to be in golf. It was going to be a big deal. The Olympics was here, the Ryder Cup. It was going to change the schedule. Everybody knew that it was a big year. And while the year is not over, the biggest stuff of the year is over. And so we're going to bring in Rich Lerner right now, the man who has been at every big event this year for Golf Channel, and really every big event for Golf Channel over the last 20 years on Golf Central, Golf Channel, live from. Rich Lerner, you know him, you love him. Richie, how you doing, buddy?
JC, I'm doing great. I'm back in my hometown.
Oh, nice.
Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Can never get home enough, can you?
Yeah, you know what? Home is just the greatest, and Arnold talked about that so much. I'm a Pennsylvania guy through and through, and I made an immediate detour to the Brass Rail.
Yeah.
Possibly the greatest cheesesteaks on the planet. The original cheesesteak goes back 75 years, so that was last night. I'll go to Sal's for, I think, some of the best pizza in the world. Best lunchtime today. I'll probably drive by my dad's old range, which is no longer.
Yep.
It's like every other strip of land in the United States. There's a Carrabba's and a Dunkin' Donuts and a Kinko's and whatever else goes in a strip mall. And I'll reflect on the early days of Dorneyville Golf Center, which is on just off of Cedar Crest Boulevard in Allentown. There's a story behind that. I don't know if people have heard it. And it relates to Arnold. So, mid-1950s, my dad's late 20s, loved golf, was about a 10 handicap. He and three of his buddies used to go play up in the Poconos, where, by the way, Arnold met Winnie at mm-hmm. the old Fred Waring Pocono Pro-Am. Winnie was from Coopersburg, Pennsylvania, which is not far from Allentown, maybe 15, 20 minutes. But anyway, my dad and his buddies were driving back, and I guess there was a par three on the way home in the East Stroudsburg area. And they thought, wow, that looks kind of cool. Maybe we could do something like that in Allentown. And they didn't have a proverbial pot to pee in mm-hmm. at the time. You know, these were three guys, you know, with families looking to make it. And somehow they cobbled together the money, and they opened the golf center. Now, my dad was a really good entrepreneur, no longer with us, rest in peace, Pop. But he had this idea that he would ask Arnold Palmer to put his name on this new venture. Mm-hmm. And maybe if it went well, they'd have a string of Arnold Palmer golf centers, because Arnie was rising. And when my father found out Arnold's asking price to put his name on this new venture, Dorneyville Golf Center was born.
Wow.
It was named for the little borough on the edge of town. I never failed to remind Arnold that. He always had a good laugh. And then when I was a kid growing up in Allentown, we always heard, I was born in 1960, we had always heard about Arnold's exploits at our local municipal course, Allentown Municipal, which is where I'm sitting right now. The coffee shop is about a quarter of a mile to my right. It was a really good public course. In its day, Allentown Municipal was called the Monster. It was a par 73. It was over 7,000 yards. It was really long. Arnold came to play an exhibition with Gary Player, and Arnold shot 61. This was in 1963, I want to say. I have to check. Early 60s. Arnold shot 12 under 61, and the headline in the paper the next day was, "The Monster is Dead." And so I'd always heard about that story, and Arnold remembers it, as all great players remember their finest rounds. He remembered it well into his 80s. So, yeah, it's good to be home, JC. It's nice and cool. It's a beautiful fall day, and I love it.
That's beautiful. That is beautiful. Well, let's look. I think we got to stay on. We have to stay on, Arnie. You know, you've told the story beautifully about how your mother told you to get your ass down here and take this job with because if Arnold's name was on it, then you better get down here. And that's paid off. That's paid off in spades for you, I would say. But let's talk. You know, look, you've been on our air for so much After he passed, Golf Channel was on for 23 hours, and you were on for a heck of a lot of those. That rolled right into the Ryder Cup, and then after the Ryder Cup, we rolled back into the memorial service. So just sort of a little inside baseball stuff here, Richie, just what it's like to go on air and a little behind-the-scenes stuff, just be able to sit there and just the whole package, trying to keep it together and you know, battle the emotions while kind of doing your job. Just kind of take us through some of that.
All right. Well, I'll share with you, JC. I had a file, and it was just like a blue binder that it's called Arnie. And all the stories, notes, articles I'd collected through the years and put it in this binder in anticipation of the day that we all dreaded, nobody wanted to really face. But in our business, as you know, it's something you have to consider with all the great players. How are you going to treat them and the story when they're no longer with us? It's very common in our business, right? In the newspaper business, television business, to prepare for that eventuality. Really, for the last 2 years, every time I went to cover a tournament, I'd look at it on my desk at home and I'd say, you should bring it. But you never think it's going to happen, right? But I always brought it, stuffed it in my suitcase, and traveled with Arnie. And we were at a restaurant in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, Sunday night before the Ryder Cup. Flew in Sunday. We begin live froms on Monday, about 7 o'clock Central Time, having dinner with a colleague, and he looks at his phone and he says, "There's a rumor that Arnold passed." We obviously got my attention, and he said, "Well, you know, maybe it's just a rumor."
Sure.
30 minutes later, I believe it was Alex Maselli had confirmed the report that Arnold had died. So we hustled, got out of the restaurant. I hadn't shaved. I was in my jeans. I ran back to the Courtyard Marriott, which was 5 minutes away, put a suit on, cleaned up, shaved. I got in the car, and our producer, Matt Hegarty, was out at Hazeltine National. Fortunately, our set was already operational. It's a big setup, but they had all the lighting and the desk was ready to go. And he said, "How far away are you?" I said, "Well, the GPS says we're 12 minutes. He says, "You're on TV in 15 minutes. So we raced. Adam Herzog, my colleague, literally dropped me off with a runner who was waiting with a cart. And we made the 5 minute cart ride to the set up by the clubhouse. And I sat down. There was a makeup person there, quick touch up, and lights came on, and away we went. I made the announcement. It was in the teleprompter, again, prepared. It was a brief statement, and I tossed to a piece that had already been done by Jimmy Roberts. And it was in the neighborhood of 3 minutes, and then we sort of regrouped, and I came back, repeated the news, if I'm not mistaken, and then I threw to a 22 or 23 minute obituary legacy piece that had already been prepared. It was a comprehensive look at his life, his achievements, his family, and his legacy. And from there, we had a list that we'd already thought about of people, friends, peers that we would call. From that point forward, Golf Channel was essentially a home. Yep. It was a warm home for the golf community, for the golf world, to come, walk in, sit down, listen to stories, share their memories, and grieve and laugh and remember Arnold. And what I had heard in the ensuing days was that it was therapeutic. And I think it was. And from my standpoint, you're somewhere caught between grieving and working.
Well, yeah, focus, that's
interesting. Focusing.
Yeah.
And focusing. And I went till, I guess it was about a five-hour stint till maybe 2 in the morning Central Time. I can't quite remember the specifics. And then Kelly took over from the studio in Orlando. Mm-hmm. We were live. And then I went back to the hotel, slept a few hours, and came back at 8 in the morning Central Time to continue the coverage. And I do recall I was in the hotel room. I had just a few hours sleep, and I one of those kind of moments, sad man moments, just your own mortality, just the sadness of it. And I had the shaving cream on. I'm in my boxers and a T-shirt and just looking in the mirror, and my face is hanging off, and I started thinking about Arnold. And then I kind of thought about my dad who passed, you know, a few years ago, and that generation that the book is closing mm-hmm. on a generation that I love. And I just started bawling.
Yeah.
And, you know, had to kind of regroup and just have one of those moments. You get a little bit older, you have them now and then, because, you know, you just can't stop the tidal wave of time. It just, you're more aware of it as you get into your 50s. It just doesn't, it's relentless. Mm-hmm. And you'd like to put up the stop sign, but you know you can't.
Yeah.
And Arnold was such a good man. You know, I think of the guys that I knew from that generation. They were just like my dad. They're just good guys. Mm-hmm. They were simple, good guys. And Arnold loved people. He was loved back. I think, someone said this to me, Courtney Holt. You know, was one of our MVPs, the Golf Channel. She's in charge of player relations and does so much. But Courtney said, what a life he lived. Because mm-hmm. when you think about it, you go to a funeral and sometimes you'll hear that, well, he or she never knew how loved they were. Mm-hmm. Well, in Arnold's case, he absolutely knew.
He knew.
Had to have known how deeply and widely loved he was. And those who loved him knew he loved them back.
Sure.
And what I don't know what more could you ask for, at the end of it all.
Yeah, and so I'll ask you this last question about him, and then we'll move on a little bit to sort of bigger picture stuff on how crazy of a year this has been. But you know, then we go right from the news of the death, which was, you know, took a while for everybody to get over, and then rolled into the Ryder Cup. But as I mentioned, we roll out and then back into his memorial service, and I know you and Kelly did a great job up there at La Trobe for the memorial service. Was that, you know, you saw Charlie Meacham get up there and talk about, hey, this isn't sad, it should be a celebration, and it turned out to be. But funerals and memorial services, by nature, are sad. How did you, by that point, you know, how were you dealing with it? Was it more, yeah. Did you feel like it was more of a celebration?
Well, yeah, I mean, and you know, Charlie's wonderful.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah, he just has an ease about yeah. him. There's a comfort in his voice. At times I laughed, you know, mm-hmm. with everyone else, whatever the story may have been from any of the speakers. And then when Vince Gill played You've Got a Friend.
Oh, yeah. I get
the
you.
The puddles came. I cried. You know, I mean, just it's life. I mean, it's hard to tell somebody how they should feel. That's
sure.
that's personal, but I experienced the range of emotions. I mean, there was comfort in knowing that it was, as his book says, a life well played, mm-hmm. A life well lived. And I guess the book's coming out today, tomorrow. And I had the good fortune to actually do the audio book.
Oh, awesome.
Arnold's memoirs, yeah. And Macmillan will have it out any day, maybe today. I should know that. But anyway, so the memorial service I thought was just beautiful. Mm-hmm. They hit all the right notes. And what was really poignant was in the aftermath, everybody had filed out. And St. Vincent Basilica Parish is magnificent. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something you would see in Europe. If you get to La Trobe, and someone said La Trobe could sort of be like Graceland in a way.
Hadn't thought of that. That's interesting.
Yeah, and you know, a destination. And if some somebody's going through La Trobe at some point, I would say go to St. Vincent. Just have a few minutes inside the basilica there. It goes back, the parish actually goes back to the 1700s, the actual building for the early 1900s. And anyway, people had filed out, and it was just this gorgeous day. It was pure Pennsylvania, crisp blue sky, temperature maybe in the 60s. And everybody had gathered, and Pete Luster, his pilot for all those years, had been doing flyovers. And he came around for one last flyover, and everybody was gathered, and their heads were looking skyward. Mm-hmm. And he flew over, and then he pointed the nose up, mm-hmm. and he went straight up to the heavens. And Steve Wheatcroft, one of the young players who was there, said, it was as if the plane had taken Arnold to heaven. It just went up and up and up and then disappeared.
Yeah.
And it was a very powerful sort of final, mm-hmm. final act. And I was gratified to see Ricky and Bubba,
yeah.
and Tim Heron and Billy Horschel and Matt Every and yep. Greg Owen and John Senden. With Phil Mickelson and Billy Andrade and Lanny Watkins and Jack Nicklaus. And, it was a great outpouring of love and an acknowledgement of the importance of Arnold and simply what a good man he was.
Yeah.
It was a lovely goodbye.
That's beautiful. Well, let's before we move on to the summer. I did want to congratulate you there, Richie. A little a Lou Kline Award for media excellence, or doing a job well done from Temple, the School of Media and Communications from Temple.
Yeah.
This past weekend, you were hanging with Tina Fey. Is that correct?
Well,
I don't know if hanging is the proper word, but you spent some time with Tina Fey.
Tina was sort of the keynote honoree. Tina's actually from suburban Philadelphia, Upper Darby. And Tina did a Q&A with the students first at like 9:30 in the morning, and I was able to go to that. She had some really good advice. If door's not open wherever you're trying to get in, go find the basement window and get in that way. And, you know, hard work, less ass kissing, be competent, just really good, sensible advice. Tina grew up in Upper Darby. She went to the University of Virginia. Her father actually went to Temple. That's the connection to the university. Her father came out of the Korean War and went to the School of Communications, became a journalist. And Tina's brother worked for QVC, so he was in the business. He went to Temple, and he introduced her and just talked about what a funny household it was growing up. And she spoke, really, as you would guess, really humorously about Philadelphia and how Philadelphians have a strong bullshit meter.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll call bullshit, if I could say, I just said it anyway, so you don't mind, JC. They'll call it on you when they see it.
Yeah.
And, but it was a great day, and my family was there and had tremendous support from Golf Channel and Comcast, and you know, just you get how many years in the business. those days are nice,
yeah.
And I love Temple. Was great to me. It opened up a whole new world. I covered Big Five basketball games. I worked at this a really famous, legendary college radio station called The Point, WRTI. And it's a jazz. It was primarily jazz back in the day. Now I think it's split jazz and classical music. But to work there as a student in the 80s was just an incredible scene. It was the local jazz guru spinning Coltrane while dorks like me did sports updates. I mean, it was just this beautiful mix of people.
Yeah.
And then I was lucky enough to have been able to do play-by-play college basketball while I was in school at the Palestra. And growing up in the area, you know, in that time, city series games were the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah,
they were electric. Temple against St. Joe's, Villanova against Penn, My dad went to Penn, so you know, he took us to the Palestra, the Four Learner Boys, you know, from the time we were, you know, 8, 10, 12 years old. Mm-hmm. He always used to point, he played as a freshman, he always used to point at the picture. They had team pictures around the concourse, and we always went and hunted for Pop's picture. And those were great days. And so it was it's always good to go back to Philadelphia. I love the city.
That's beautiful. Well, well-deserved. Congratulations.
Thanks, Jason. That's a big deal. I appreciate that.
That's awesome. Let's. I don't need to break down big event by big event, but you know, part of me, when I get thinking about it, part of me feels like March was 2 days ago, and part of me feels like March was 10 years ago. We kind of always knew that the Masters was going to roll into the Players, roll into the U.S. Open, into the Open, into the PGA, the Olympics, the Ryder Cup. Here we are. We thought this was going to be a big week because of Tiger. That's now no longer the case. What are sort of the you know, when we sit down at the end of the year here, which is not too far away, and you reflect, what are the two All or three right. things that are going to really, really stick with you?
All right. Well, I'm going to give you my theme of the year. I'm going to go, I don't know if you're going to buy this or not.
Well,
I hope I don't terribly offend any of the great young players, whom I believe also are great young men.
Yep.
But I don't think this was their finest year. They had good years, and they had great moments. But I think this was the year of the grown man. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is it primarily goes to the Olympics and all the negativity swirling around the Olympics. But it filtered into some of the other tournaments. So the year of the grown man, it was Stenson. 63 to beat Mickelson, 65 at the Open. Mm-hmm. It was Dustin Johnson growing up and becoming a man, you know, not just this year, but over the course of the last couple of years, and jumping over some legitimate obstacles to win a rugged U.S. Open at Oakmont. Mm-hmm. It was Justin Rose leading the brigade to Rio and winning gold over Henrik, when most of the younger stars said no. Mm-hmm. And that's why I sort of dubbed this the year of the grown man. I felt that most acutely in the run-up to the Olympics.
Yeah.
I was pro-Olympic Games. I thought it could be a huge or among the best Grow the Game initiatives that we've rolled out. Time will tell.
Sure.
But I felt like the young players missed an opportunity. And I know they were fed information that was very negative, and some of it was alarming. But while they were equivocating and waffling, the likes of Stenson and Rose bought in from the start.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, couple that with what happened to Jordan at the Masters.
Yeah.
It was the year of the grown man, the mature man. And I think, you know, I don't know this for a fact, but my hunch is that, an older Jordan Spieth would probably go to the Olympics.
Yeah.
And I thought he really had a chance to be Captain America.
I would agree with that.
In that moment in time. And Captain America... I don't mean to minimize Zika because it is a threat, but sure. Captain America is not afraid of a little mosquito. Stenson himself said that, right? I'm not afraid of a little mosquito.
Sure.
And maybe it wasn't. I know Jordan said it wasn't just the Zika. I want to be clear on that. So what he didn't specify. So if it was security, whatever it may have been, I'm sure his people presented him with the information, and based upon that, he made the decision.
Mm-hmm.
I feel as though the people who were advising may not have fully understood what they mean when they say the Olympic bubble, that when you go to these Olympic Games, you're kind of in a protective bubble.
Yeah.
And we certainly experienced that when we were down there.
Mm-hmm.
Our hotel, you couldn't get to our hotel unless you were in one of those vans and had a special pass.
Yep.
Everything was pretty much locked down.
Yeah.
And once everyone arrived at the Olympics and jumped into the experience, you heard what the players had to say. It was one of the greatest experiences of their lifetime. Mm-hmm. And Jordan, in that moment at the Troon, when he made his announcement, had he gone in front of the world and said, look, are there risks? There are risks wherever you go in this world, unfortunately, mm-hmm. nowadays. But I think this is a good time to try to bring countries together.
Yeah.
And there is no better place to do that than the Olympic Games. I am going to represent the country that I love, mm-hmm. that has afforded me and my family so many opportunities. I'm going to represent the sport that I love. I'm going to stand shoulder to shoulder with the 10,000 other athletes of the Olympic Games. I'm all in.
Yeah.
Had he said that,
yeah.
he would have been the man of the year.
Absolutely.
He would have been Captain America. He still can be. He's a wonderful young man and a phenomenal player. Yeah. I just feel objectively, and you may have a different opinion, who's ever listening, mm-hmm. that they missed yeah. an opportunity. And again, I know that their decision was based on the information they had at that time. But Rose went comfortably. Stenson yeah. went comfortably. Fowler, Bubba, they all went.
Right.
And anyway, so that's my overarching theme is the year of the grown man. Mm-hmm. And then I would say, you know, in terms of ranking the stories, I know you and your team do a top stories of the year. I would probably say one would be Spieth at the Masters.
Yes.
I think two, and you could, this is where it gets dicey. I don't know, you know, two through five,
yeah.
maybe we'll mix the order up. I would say, would be the Olympic Games. They think the impact's far-reaching. And don't forget, that was a story that was a 3-4-month story. Who's in,
yeah.
who's not?
Oh, yeah.
Are you playing? You're not. And it was a surprise hit. It exceeded everyone's expectations. So two Olympics. I'll say three or four, it's a toss-up between, you go Dustin at Oakmont and the controversy with the USGA.
Yeah.
Henrik shooting 63 to beat Phil, final round Troon, and then Ryder Cup 5.
Yeah,
so those five are probably on the men's side. I don't want to shortchange women. I cover the men's game primarily. So I would say those are the five stories.
Yeah, I can live with that. I think those are the those are clearly the five. You know, you could debate till the cows come home order, but I think you're probably right there. I think that Spieth thing at the Masters is just for sheer drama, and I think it's just you're gonna have a hard time beating that no matter what. And I was at the Olympics like you, remember? I mean, we went to swimming together, and we're both almost in tears by watching Michael Phelps
yeah.
and Katie Ledecky win. And I don't consider myself an emotional guy. I think the Olympics is probably second. You can make a case that it's number one because, you know, I was. And I've said this, too. I didn't say it too openly before because I wanted to go, but I was a huge swimmer growing up. So when it comes to the Olympics, I mean, I've been Rowdy Gaines in 1984 when I was 11 years old. I was a part-time swimmer at that time. And him winning in L.A., the gold medal in the 100 free, that I was hooked. I was absolutely hooked and had never gone to the Olympics. Well, then, you know, with golf being in the Olympics, that provided an opportunity for me to go to something that I had always wanted to go to, although I was late to the game with – it took me a while to buy in with golf in the Olympics. And even when I went down there, I was excited about it, but I was hesitant for all the reasons that we don't need to hash up, right? And all the – you know, it's never going to be the biggest thing. It's never – you know, these guys aren't – all that kind of stuff. I wasn't caught up in it, but I understood. But still, when I got down there and just, you know, I didn't do half the things that Ricky and Bubba did, but I went to a lot of sports. I had some pretty good access that, you know, we don't need to talk about. But you and I, we had, you cannot have gone and seen what we saw during those 2 weeks there and say that it was not an overwhelming success. You cannot say those words. Anybody with a brain in their head can't say that
agree.
That was a bad thing.
By the way, let me amend our top five and make it six, and number one probably not. I think has to be the passing of Arnold. I just
yeah,
wow,
yeah.
It just sort of like, hey,
yeah. We talked about it for the first. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, given his impact on the game, contributions to the sport, Arnold's
absolutely.
Passing probably
absolutely.
Is the story
yeah, yeah.
story
you know
of the year. And then
absolutely.
After that, then you
absolutely.
Can go ahead and rank it. But yeah, I agree. I think going forward, Jay, I think the playing in an Olympic Games, representing your country, will become a paramount goal for almost every player.
Correct.
Current player and players who aspire to be among the best, if they're 10, 11 years old now.
Without question.
I would say it will be win a major, represent your country, and maybe win a gold medal, and then play in your international team competition,
Absolutely.
Ryder Cup, Solheim Cup, President's Cup. I think it's a legitimate goal. I think it's right up there among the great achievements. It will be as time goes by. It will be considered, but not just by us, but by the players, to be among the great achievements in their careers. And because it only comes along once every 4 years. There's no guarantee that you'll ever get there. You may be injured. You may be in a slump and get passed by only 60 players. So
it's a big deal.
I think that won't be lost on the players going forward.
All right, Richie, we've been doing this for close to a half hour, and I don't want to.
Did we miss anything?
No, we haven't. But here, I want to make a point that we did not talk about Tiger Woods. I don't want to talk about Tiger Woods. I'm not suggesting we talk about it. I want to make a point that we have had plenty to talk about for a half hour, with the six big stories of the year. We came up with all that stuff without talking about Tiger Woods, and I feel that's
what do you?
Not a bad
thing. I'm just curious, JC. What do you think? What do you think of the withdrawal?
On Friday, he was well enough to play on Thursday, but on Monday he's not well enough to play for two more months. That's weird.
What's going on? It's rhetorical because we're not going to get an answer.
No,
that's the thing. We just don't know. Anybody who says they know is lying. No one knows.
Correct.
You're left to wonder what vulnerable.
Correct.
Look, I may say
that word. It hurt to read that word from Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I mean, does that mean he's chunking chips, blading chips? I don't know. Does that mean he can't put his tee ball on the map?
Correct.
I don't know.
Does that mean that he's afraid to hit to take a swing in public? Does it mean
You know, there are a couple of things you can say here. One is this funk that he's been in is as extreme and hard to fathom, hard to figure as the dominant decade. That was
hard to explain, hard to explain.
Right, to be that dominant, it was extreme greatness, and it was almost impossible to explain that someone could be that good for that period of time, so consistently week in, week out, blow your mind.
Yep.
And when people ask me about Tiger, I always say, look, before we get to the what's wrongs and is he going to come back and all that stuff, Just stop, and you have to acknowledge how spectacular, special, all-time he was.
Correct.
You win 25% of your career starts, you are a 420 lifetime hitter in baseball, period. Mm-hmm. Fred Couples wins, 3-4% of his career starts and is in the Hall of Fame.
Correct.
If Hall of Fame is 4% Hall of Fame, then 24-5% is something
it's ridiculous.
Nobody can really comprehend. So let's get and would we like to have him back? Yes. Do I wish him well? Of course.
Sure.
But we simply don't know. And I've always been of the mind, we did this story at the Masters in 2015, that this is not simply a physical recovery. This is not a recovery from back issues. That's part of it. This is a recovery from an emotional trauma. Mm-hmm. Of what is it now? 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's what we know. I don't know a whole lot. I know he was great.
Yep.
I know he had an emotional trauma related to the accident, the scandal.
Yep.
And outside of that, I don't know a whole lot.
I don't either.
I really don't. And I wish him well.
Absolutely.
And I wasn't, frankly, I was not that surprised.
I wasn't either.
That he pulled out. And it's puzzling.
Yeah, it is.
But there you go.
All right, buddy.
Lots here, to talk about, JC.
This is what we're going to do. One final thing with the last couple minutes here. Well, it's a podcast, so it's endless. We could do this for 2 hours. We're not going to, but we could. So there's not a hard out here. And your speak, Richie, there is not a hard out. But
good TV lingo. I
do want to tell you that about 15 years ago, you and I didn't know each other from anybody, but we were stuck in a dinner outside of Winter Park at Houston's Restaurant, and I was with my colleague at Golf Week at the time, Jeff Rude. We rolled up at a table. You were there with some Golf Channel guys. This was long before. I've been here for 8.5 years, although, by the way, already. And this was long before I started working here in 2008. And you were going off as one Vin Scully. Rich Lerner was doing a mean Vin Scully. Or it was a mean Vin Scully. And
well,
I know that you've done it many times since.
Yeah.
But
was it the Vin at the restaurant? Was it Vin Scully at an Italian restaurant with Tommy Lasorda?
It was.
Joey Amalfitano.
Yeah, it was. So I guess what I'm saying is here, and Vin's as relevant now as he was that day 15 years ago because of the last couple weeks. So I wonder, Richie, if for this last minute you can take us out of the Monday Scramble podcast as Vin Scully.
All right, well,
and before we do that, I want to thank you for everything, buddy.
JC, thanks for your friendship.
Congrats on
years.
Your award and
thanks,
and everything. So
yeah.
So
thanks for your support. Well, let me just give you, because I can't do anything in 10 seconds, because you're wondering about the Tommy Lasorda bit. And this is a little locker room-ish.
Sure,
but
sure.
What the hell, we're on a podcast. So the bit was Tommy Lasorda and the Dodger team, they were down at Vero Beach at spring training, and they went out for Italian food. And Tommy Lasorda turned to his third base coach, Joey Amalfitano, and he must have had some sausage and peppers that was a little too spicy. And he said to Joey, pull my finger. And in one huge thunderclap, the Dodgers skipper cleared the entire restaurant. That's wrong. But anyway, do you know
beautiful.
What I always loved about Vin? Do you know Vin back when he golfed? And the key with Vin is the vowels. You know, the elocution was just so perfect. But if you remember the old tournament at Kapalua, it took Vin like 20 minutes just to get through the hello. Yeah. Welcome to the Mazda Kapalua International, brought to you by Subaru. It was two car sponsors, Mazda and Subaru. And with that, we've come to the end of the Monday Scramble with the great Jay Coffin at golfchannel.com. So long, everybody.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Richie. We'll catch up with you soon, buddy.
Days,
all right, buddy.
All right,
that wraps it up for this special edition of the Monday Scramble. Thanks a lot for listening. Keep it locked on golfchannel.com. Take care, everybody.